Now, large crowds have taken part in a march and official rally in the Nepalese capital Kathmandu to mark the 70th anniversary of the first scaling of Mount Everest by the New Zealander Edmund Hillary and the Sherpa guide Tenzing Norgay. The two climbers' sons, Peter Hillary and Jamling Norgay, led celebrations in the remote village of Kumjung on the route to Mount Everest. The occasion is also being used to raise awareness of the impact of global warming on the mountains and the glaciers which are rapidly melting. Helen Clark, the former New Zealand Prime Minister and chair of the International Panel for Climate Change, is one of those backing the campaign and joined us from the Himalayas, where she's been following the footsteps of her famous compatriot.
It's been an amazing trip celebrating the 70th anniversary of the first ascent of Mount Everest by Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary of New Zealand. We've been walking in the footsteps of the humanitarian work which Ed Hillary has done through the New Zealand Himalayan Trust over many, many, many years. I'm now a patron of the Trust, and we love coming to see the successful projects in the schools, the hospital and the health clinics, the water projects, the reforestation. So it's really been a celebration of many things.
But it's not just a celebration that has brought you to the Himalayas. You also have a purpose and a message with this trip.
Yes, I've put my name to the Save Our Snow call, which has been brought together by the International Centre for Integrated Mountain Development. There's huge concern at what's happening to this third pole of the world, the Hindu Kush Himalaya mountain system. And there's no question that the region's mountains are undergoing irreversible change. We're told that two-thirds of the glaciers here will be gone in 70 years. And that has huge downstream consequences, not only for the roughly quarter of a million people who live in the vicinity, but the 2 billion people downstream. When we think of the scale of the Pakistan floods in recent times, these were exacerbated by melting glaciers. So we have a pretty grim future ahead if we continue not to bring greenhouse gas emissions down sufficiently to stop these catastrophic consequences.
And as you're trekking all over the Himalayas, are you seeing some of those thinning and melting glaciers?
So we didn't go up as far as base camp and above that, but the glaciers that Ed Hillary and Tenzing Norgay saw, that's severely receded, as are those around the other mountains in the system. You know, even if the world temperature rise was to peak at 1.5 degrees, that's still too hot for these mountains. And the experts are telling us that we will reach that 1.5 degree level in the next 5 years. Now, at this time, the world's governments collectively do not have the level of ambition to bring down greenhouse gas emissions that is necessary to save our snow in these mountains and really save our planet from catastrophic and irreversible change.
And you saying that we are facing a grim future if nothing is done. Well, what do you think ordinary citizens from the globe can do with helping the glaciers in the Himalayas?
The first step is to make it clear to their governments that they expect more ambitious action to get out of fossil fuels. This is absolutely critical. We cannot continue to burn oil and gas for our heating and our transport and energy and industry in general. We have to move to renewables. Secondly, we have to save our tropical forests, which have been such great stores for greenhouse gases. And as the tropical forests have receded before our eyes in Brazil, the Congo Basin, the Indonesian Papua New Guinea forests, again, we're losing opportunities to be able to cope with climate change. So those are two big areas. Stop deforestation, restore degraded forests, and get out of fossil fuels. We have to be out of coal. We have to be out of oil and gas.
Helen Clark there, the former New Zealand Prime Minister and chair of the International Panel for Climate Change.
Now to the United States, where the trial begins later today of the man accused of killing 11 people in a Pittsburgh synagogue in 2018. It was the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in American history. Robert Bowers could face the death penalty if convicted. Our correspondent, Gary O'Donoghue, reports from the city.
The families designed the monument. It is in the shape of a Torah scroll.
Mel Wax, Daniel Stein and Richard Gottfried all died that day, along with eight others in the worst anti-Semitic attack in the history of the United States. Three congregations worshipping in the Tree of Life synagogue were targeted in a hate-filled 15-minute massacre. Stephen Cohen is president of the small New Light congregation. All three of his congregants who died were close personal friends.
But no one had ever taken a gun while prayers were going on to kill people simply because they were Jews.
So we're in the Adult Learning Center at Road of Shalom, and on the wall here, there are colorful tapestries with Hebrew letters, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam.
Across town at the Radef Shalom Synagogue, Amy Bardak is rabbi to the Dor Hadash congregation, which lost one of its members, Jerry Rabinowitz, in the shooting. She coordinated the city's rabbis in the wake of the attack to ensure funerals could happen quickly in line with Jewish traditions.
As a community, we came together in terms of security training, in terms of offering support from chaplains, support from therapists and other mental health professionals. So realizing that the community as a whole was affected, at the same time, there are people most closely impacted.
Here at Temple Sinai, they spend a huge amount of their budget on security, trying to balance the competing demands of safety and openness. Daniel Fellman is the congregation's rabbi.
Our security budget is ridiculously high. And if we compare it to our Christian neighbors, the notion of having armed security in our building at all times is anathema to them.
That question of security is not unique to Pittsburgh. Across America, anti-Semitism is on the rise, with around 3,700 incidents recorded last year alone, the largest number on record. Much of it has been fueled by online activity. The alleged killer in Pittsburgh had posted regularly on white supremacist and anti-Semitic sites. Oren Siegel is from the Anti-Defamation League.
This was the deadliest attack against the Jewish community in American history. And yet here we are, about 5 years later, talking about historic rises in anti-Semitic incidents. I mean, that's not where we should be 5 years after a tragedy like that, and yet that is where we are.
This case in Pittsburgh is unusual in the sense that much of the time perpetrators of mass shootings don't survive. Here, Robert Bowers gave himself up and is now facing 63 counts, including hate crime charges, which can carry the death penalty. David Harris, a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, has been counseling the families ahead of the trial so they know what to expect.
And one of the functions of having a trial is that we tell the story in public. The victims have an opportunity. Here is what I experienced. This is what this has meant to me, not only just in the raw facts of what happened, but here's what happened to my family.
Back at Temple Sinai, they're celebrating the confirmation of four young members of the congregation. The joy and the pride in their Jewish identity is plain to see. But, says Daniel Fellman, everyone knows the coming weeks while the trial is on will be difficult for the whole community.
I think bringing this to justice, resolving it in a way, allowing the victims to be heard, allowing their families to be heard, is something that this community needs as part of our healing.
A report there from Gary O'Donoghue, our correspondent in North America. Plenty more to come on that story on the World Service, of course. You're listening to Newsday with Vic and James.